Accession number 30398, Mr. Nathan Ritz, Rail 7. Now, so what else happened? In reserve, they seem to have done quite a lot of training, things like river crossing, all sorts of things. Would you as signalers get involved in that, or were you excused that?
We were excused that, but this is what's happened one day. It was one day. We were getting shelled. And we weren't shelled by the enemy, we were getting shelled by the Americans.
But this wouldn't be while you were at Pikehouse Reservoir.
Yeah, when we were in reserve, they were shelling us. Or it could. Anyway, I thought, well, they were saying, well, there, shall we? And I thought, well, there's no time for me to get in touch with anybody. I'll go straight through to the American themselves. So I went right through to their headquarters, right? So I said, I put on an American accent. I was very good at accents. You know, I copied. And they didn't even know. So I said, who am I speaking to? I'm Colonel so-and-so. Well, I'm General so-and-so. Well, they don't know one general from another, the American. You just make up any name. So I said, if you don't stop that, I said, I'll come over there and I'm going to kick your effing ass. It went, boom, stopped. But that's not the end of the story. So General Ridgway, who was the man who was in charge of the American, well, he was in charge of all those, he said, I want to meet me. He wanted to meet me. So I had to go over to the American lines. Emerson said, he wants to see you. So I went over to the American lines. And we're all lining up in this line. And he comes out. Because he used to wear these funny hats with feathers in. Americans are. So he's walking along. And out of his pocket, he's decorating everybody as he's going. What am I bloody doing down here then? You know, he's got all different medals in his pocket, different ones. He's got them. He's got silver one, bronze one, this one they go around the neck because they don't bump me. Anyway, I'm in the bunch at the back, and he comes to me and he says to me, you're the man that, you know, so and so and so and so, didn't you? So I said, yes, sir. He said, you shouldn't have done that. So he said, where'd you come from, son? So I said, London. What part of London? Oh, you know. And he takes this medal out of his pocket and he goes, that, and he sticks it on. There. Look at it, it's a bronze star. And I thought, what the bloody hell have I got? Anyway, he goes along the line and he finishes, and they all salute, blump, blump, we've got to go back. And there's another bloke with me, he's got the silver medal, and he, this British bloke. So he gets hold of it, throws it on the floor, and he goes, fuck the Americans.
Treads it into the ground.
Around here, fuck the Americans, and he walks off. Never saw him again. And I thought, oh, I'll do the same. I went to the engine room and I slung it in there. Emerson, he went bloody mad, didn't he? I never got... The thing that annoyed me the most, I mean, all right, I got the medal, I don't know what for, but I get no recognition from the British at all. Nothing, not a word. Nothing mentioned at all. He just said, well done, and that's all he said. And I thought, well, that's not a very, that's a sort of a snub, you know, that sort of saying, well, I don't know what you got it for, I'm not giving you anything, plump, enough. Oh, I didn't think much of it then, until years later, when I got very pally with this bloke, well, we went to Korea to revisit, and we were in the British Embassy, and there's an American general there, and we're talking, and he went bloody mad, the American general, when I told him. He went bloody barmy. He slated me. You know, I felt like that. He slated me. Oh, what's American thing's no good enough for you, he said. And he went bloody barmy. And I thought, well, what do I do? My friend said to me, well, the best thing to do is phone up the American embassy when you get back and see what happens. Well, I phoned them up and through it, I've got another medal come through the post. I just said I lost it, you know, movie for my family. I didn't tell them what I did. And I got the medal back again. And they said, oh, I thought it was Van Fleet. They said, no, you got the wrong general. It was Ridgway. And I told you I forgot his name, and it came to me in my sleep. And he said, you must remember me. I said, of course I do, General. He said, what's my name? I said, Ridgway.
Now, after anything else about the period in reserve? I mean, you're not too clear about this period, are you?
No, I don't know whether it's reserve or I'm in the front line. This is the thing that I'm mixed up with.
Now, you move up to Koh Ang San then, and that's up to the top, you know, the area just in front of the engine, and by Hill 355.
That's it, 355.
Now, Now, what's the situation when you move into that area?
Well, we're right on the front line, and we've taken Hill 355 because it's the most strategic point around there. 355, you can see everything around there. We're on at the King's Own Scottish borders are on there, the Scotsmen, and anyway, they have to come down, and the Americans have to take over. Well, you know what it's like. The Americans have a few rounds, and they run. They go. What happens? The Cosbys have to go back up again and retake. And this is what's happening all the time. They come down, they take it. They come down, they come down. And it's just absolute chaos with the Americans. I mean, you know what happened with the Gloucesters, and you know why.
But that's a long time before.
Yeah, but that was their fault, actually. But I'm not going into that. And we were just... I mean, we're doing virtually the same thing, going up, going on patrol, coming back. And then we weren't up there all that long, about a few weeks. And they said, right, we're being pulled back out again because our time was up.
Now, there's definite confusions here because you've got to get wounded, sent to Japan and everything else.
Oh, that was previous. That was before.
But you said...
The first lot.
But you said it wasn't in the Samichong.
No, it was in the Samichong, the first one. No, I did say that we were in the Samichong. The second lot? No, I didn't. Not the second time. No.
Now we can see there's some confusions here, and basically a lot of what you're talking about is in Koang San, not in the Samichong.
Valley,
so we'll adjust the cataloguing to reflect that.
Yeah, would you? I'm sorry.
No, it's not. I'm
not trying to mislead you.
50 years ago.
It's over 50 years ago, and it's very difficult.
Now, anything? Do you remember anything more about the period in Koang San? You'd be on Hill 238.
Yeah, 238.
Now, do you remember anything more about that time, or is it basically what you've been telling me about the other one?
Virtually the same about the other one, I suppose, really.
I've mixed them up,
the two of them.
No problem.
See, it wasn't long enough in the first one. We was in the second. It was the second lot, it must have been. Yeah.
Now, when you got wounded, I mean, what happened then? Tell us about being in hospital.
Well, I was in there for about 5 weeks.
Where was it? That was in Tokyo. And what was it? How did you get there? Were you airlifted there or what happened?
Sorry, it's my phone. Oh.
So what was it? How did you get out to Tokyo? I mean, you know, when you were wounded. Were you airlifted out or what?
How did I get out of Tokyo?
No, I mean, out to it.
I see what you mean. Well, no, I think I went by ship.
And what was it like when you were hospitalised out there?
Oh, it was quite good. Enjoyable with the nurses and the... Because they were British nurses, Australian nurses, American nurses. But it was all British guys. I mean, some of them were... I don't want to remember how some of them were. They really were bad.
But
no
were
legs.
How bad was your leg?
It wasn't that bad. It was just that it hit a vein and, you know, it got into the bone virtually. And they got it out because their medication to then wasn't like today. You know, I mean, today it would be nothing, you know, but then it, and was in bed, and we got out, they let us out, we wore these blue uniforms to walk around Japan, and we went into different, I remember going into these shows with the Japanese women, you know, it was the first time I'd seen nude shows, never seen nude shows before, and their nude shows, nothing like ours, completely everything, they don't bother about anything. But there was one bloke in there, I always remember it. He was an Australian. He'd been captured during the Second World War by the Japanese, and he spoke fluent Japanese, and he actually conversed, and they were laughing, because we didn't know what they were laughing about, but he knew what they were laughing. And, I don't know. But anyway, after that few weeks, they sent me back.
Now, how did you feel about that?
Well... Well, I have to do my duty. If I've got to go back, I've got to go back. Wasn't very happy about it, but I thought, well, pay to compli, you know, what else can I do, you know?
And they were still in the line? And
yeah, they were still in the line when I got back. And I think Ebsden was still there, and so was Fleming, and Roach was still there. But when we came out of the line, eventually came out of the line.
Now, anything else happened while you were out there? Any other patrols you were on?
No, virtually the same. It was like repetition all the time, doing the same virtual thing. It was like the First World War, you know.
What about the weather, the hotter weather?
Mind you, when I got back, the weather was really, I mean, when it, in the summer there, it was baking. I mean, it was complete contrast to the winter. You know, the winters were bad and the summers were like tropical summers. And it was absolutely baking. And we used to dig trenches and put water in, put beer in, and when it came out, it was like putting it in the fridge, because you could dip. It's like putting it, that's how we learnt, you know. And as I say, all we wanted to think, oh, I'm glad when we can get out of here. And then they said one day, we're pulling out, we're pulling back. So we pulled back. And then I think in late September, we moved to Hong Kong.
Now, anything else about Korea at all?
No, nothing. Well, the only thing is we were waiting to, in Busan, to go to Hong Kong. And a few nights before we'd seen them, because we used to get people come home from England and do variety shows. I forgot to tell you. You know, you get famous people. You got Bob Hope came over. You get a load of good English artists come over. And one artist came over, I always remember her. She's dead now. She was Carol Carr. I don't think you would never have heard of Carol Carr. And she came over to, you know, she's a good singer at the time. Anyway, she'd done this show a few nights before we pulled back, and we were in Busan waiting to board, just embark to go to Hong Kong. And I was at my lowest ebb in my life.
Why?
Well, it's a strange thing. You've been in the front line and you're on like this, like a coiled spring. And when you come out, I came out and I thought, I don't know what it's all about. What have, you know? Why am I here? Why have I survived? And all my friends. And I sat there and my other friend, and we were absolutely, I just thought, oh, I just don't want to go on. You know, I felt so depressed. I don't know why, I can't tell you. You think you'd be depressed when you're, but it's when I came out. Anyway, this little Jeep came along and Carol Carr was in it with her entourage. And she came around and she stopped. And she came out, she didn't get out the Jeep, she just drove right to the side of me, you know what I mean? Now she's at the side of me, and she's got her hand on my hand like this. She said, going home, boys, was two of us. No, we're going to Hong Kong. She said, I bet you're glad to get out of this place. And we said, yeah, and she went, bless you, boys, bless you. And I went, woof, like back right up again. And I said, Carol, I said, don't mind me. No. I said, when you get back to England, tell them about us, what we've got. She said, I will, I will. And she drove off, and I never saw her again after that. And I felt, oh, I feel sorry. Like, it just needed somebody. I don't know why, but I just felt absolutely down in the dumps. And then we boarded the boat.
Yeah, which one?
No, I can't remember. One of the boats. We boarded the boat, and we went to Hong Kong. We're only at sea a couple of days. It was not very far from Korea to Hong Kong. And we landed in Hong Kong. We went into the New Territories to our camp. Did he say that?
You left in late September, yeah?
Yeah, I said late September, and we went to Hong Kong.
And which camp did you go to?
Ah, now that is a bloody problem. I can't remember. There were several camps, but this was in the New Territory. One of the blokes did say to me the other day, and I can't remember it.
Norwegian Farm.
Ah, Norwegian Farm, that was it.
Now, what were you doing? You didn't have long to go, did you?
Well, we got late September, yeah. Well, we should have actually gone straight back to England, really, technically, because when we joined up, we joined the end of January. Well, if you take the end of January, we should have gone back straight away, because we should have got to England in December, but we didn't. Anyway,
did that worry you? You know, that you should have been.
No, funny enough, I did. I liked Hong Kong so much. It was such a cracking. What a difference to what we'd done. It was so much. I mean, my pay was absolutely gone. It went up completely. I mean, we were regulars now. It was the last 6 months of your duty in the army full time. You get regulars pay. We were on that. Now we're on regulars pay. Plus, we're on all these overseas allowance. Plus. I was a tradesman. Plus, I was getting about 6-7 pounds. And that don't sound a lot now, but then we were living in Hong Kong. It was like pre-war. Everything was cheap.
Now you had been promoted as well. You haven't told us about that.
Oh right? Yeah, I got promoted.
When were you promoted?
In April 1952.
So soon after you joined them.
Not long afterwards. Yeah, I got promoted.
Now, tell us the story of that.
Well, he came up. oh, that's right. He came up to me, Emerson, and he said to me, started talking, and then he said to me, okay, Corporal, Lance Corporal. I said, I beg your pardon. He said, Lance Corporal. So I said, I'm private. Don't argue with me, he said. You are a Lance Corporal now, and I want you to act like one. All right, right, sir. Because he told me off in Hong Kong. Because when I went to Hong Kong, you know, the NAFI, if you go into the NAFI, the private soldiers go into one entrance, the corporals go into the lib. Anyway, somebody told on me, I went into the, he called me and he told me, he said, what are you doing? So I said, nothing. What do you mean, what am I doing? He said, you are an NCO. That means you're a non-commissioned officer. Act like one. You're not a, you know, you are now in there. If I ever see you catch you out, you will be, you know, I'll just, I thought, oh my God, I thought I'd done some bloody crime or something. He was, oh, he's a funny guy like that. He really was. He wouldn't let us mix with all the men in the regiment. He said, there's 22 of you in this, our little clique, he said, and you keep there. You don't want to mix with them out of there. You are the elite of the regiment. And I thought, elite of the regiment? He said, you are the best in the regiment. That is why you are in the signal. He said, you're the most, all of you are the most intelligent. And I thought, oh my God, something good. So that's, he was a funny man like that. He was the most, but the funniest thing is, when I got back to England, have I told...
No. You're still in Hong Kong. So what's happening in Hong Kong?
Oh, well, we used to... Well, what we used to do, we used to go to Hong Kong. So we used to get on a train down to Kowloon, and we used to get these little ferries that took us over to Hong Kong. Anyway, I was in this train, and I said to my mate, I don't understand this. He said, what do you mean? I said, we are sitting in luxury, and these poor Chinese are sitting like in cattle. They actually look like cattle trucks. I said, I don't get it. Anyway, went to a cinema, we were watching a film, we were sitting up, and it's beautiful. You don't even get cinemas in England. We were sitting all this.
This is on the island, is it?
This is in Hong Kong. When we looked, I said, oh, look, there's people down there. And they all look like bloody little, they were, it was like two different places. We were sitting in luxury, and they were actually sitting in like rickety things. And I said, this is ridiculous. We were not allowed to mix with the Chinese. We were not allowed to fraternise with them. And I remember going on, I went on patrol one day. You ever heard, you know, Read the Riot Act? So, and this officer, this bloody idiot, took a showing to me. So every time we went on the schema, he said, I want him as my wireless. And I thought, I don't believe this. I spent all this time in Korea. Now I'm back out on schemes teaching other people. I said to Emerson, can you change my name? I want to be called Joe Soap in future. And he laughed. He said, he just likes you. I thought, oh my God. He was a captain. I can't remember his name, Bishop or something his name was.
And what would you do on these exercises?
We'd go out and we'd either...
In the New Territory Hills?
Yeah. We would teach the artillery how to set up, you know, what we did in Korea, and I used to show them how to set up the radios, how to connect everybody up.
Why the artillery?
No idea. Ask the army. I couldn't tell you why. I don't know why the artillery, but that's where we went with. And one day he came out. He said, "Right, you're going into Hong Kong itself." So I thought, "Oh, that's not bad." He said, but you're going on a patrol, and he's got a banner, and it's got, it's the Riot Act. If you read this, and I thought, I don't believe this. I'm in the firing line. I'm creeping around. Because there's a lot of communist activity going on in Hong Kong. I said, I can be shot here. I was trying to hide behind him, and I followed him along with the radio.
Now, where's this patrol? I mean,
in Hong Kong itself. We were on patrol.
Hong Kong Island.
Whereabout we were going, we were...
Not in the New Territories, is it?
In Hong Kong itself. I remember we took the boat over and we were walking along these smelly streets with all their food. And, oh, God, it was stunk. Well, there is a street that they used to, I don't know, it's called Smelly Street. You go in one end, if you live there, when you get to the other end, it stunk, it really did. And, oh, we said, God, so let's get out of here. And that's what we're doing. He was walking, this bloke was walking around with a banner, the Read the Riot Act. And I thought, well, that's where it comes from, Read the Riot Act to them, you know. And that's what it was.
I mean, were they rioting?
Yeah, they were. There was trouble. There was a lot of communist agitation going on. Well, you can understand it. There's the Korean War. They're all involved in the Korean War. There's the communists in China. And there's the... we were right on the Chinese... I mean, one day they sent me right up into Lok Ma Chau, which was right on the Chinese border. And we used to have listening posts, and they were all built on stilts like that. And he said, right, we're going to Lok Ma Chau next week. I thought, oh, that's good. Oh, bloody hell, we're going right onto the new territories we went, and right on the border with China we were, right on the border.
And what were you doing?
I had to do the telephone. And
what was the patrol doing?
Well, no, we were just listening. They were listening. They had a listening device to see if they could hit to pick up what was going on in China. You know, a radio we had there. And I looked over the Soviet, and there was these peasants in the field, you know, with their big hats and the rice paddy. And they looked up and they went...
waved.
And I thought, I'm from the East End of London. I'm looking into China. I just could not believe that I was looking into China. Anyway, and as I said, around about, oh, that's right, Jack Jenner, he worked in the office, and he came to see me, and he said, we should have been home a long time ago. And then I thought, blimey, you're right, we should have been home a long time ago. He said, I tried to get us on the boat before, and he couldn't get us on the boat before. So he said, we've got you on the Asturias. There was a boat, it was a flat bottom boat that used to go to the River Plate in Argentina before. It'd also been sunk in the war, this boat, and brought back up again. So he said, we're going home. I said, well, when are we going home, Jack? He said, we're leaving December, or whatever it is, 12th.
52.
Yeah, on the 12th of December. He said, but we won't be home in time for Christmas. We'd be at sea. And oh, what a buggers they were. They wouldn't let us drink. They wouldn't let us bring in the new year. They wouldn't let us do anything. And we were like...
what was the trip like on the Asturias?
Oh, it wasn't like the other one we had. It was not bad. It was when we hit the Med and we hit a storm. Because the Med can either be like flat as a pancake or it can be rough. And it was rough. The boat, it went down the waves. And they said, don't go up on deck. Well, you know when they say don't go up. What do? You go up on deck. And I went up. I'd never seen the sky. It was black, like this virtually. And the waves were about 30, 40 foot high. And they were like, the boat was going, whoa. Anyway, we went downstairs in the engine room, the Matlows, and said, come on, we'll take you around the ship. So around the ship. And he said, see that? That's where it was sunk. And there's a bloody great thing. And it's creaking, like this. Oh, my God, we're going to go down any minute now. But after 3 days, flat as a pancake, got through the Suez Canal, got down to the other, and we were home. And we landed in England in January the 6th, I think it was.
Did you have any sort of reception? You didn't, did you?
We docked at 4 o'clock in the morning. We couldn't see a thing there because this time we landed in Southampton. The fog, anyway, the fog lifted, and they said, right, we're all getting off the boat. And we want, you know, to behave yourself. Because the trains in Southampton come virtually onto the dock. I don't know if you know South. Yeah, they came onto the dock. Well, there were steam trains in those days. And we all came off. Anyway, got into the customs. He said to me, open up your kit bag. So I opened up my kit bag. I had hardly anything in the kit bag. So he said, where have you been? So I said, I've been home, but I've been to Korea. Didn't they pay you out there? I said, no, what was there to spend anything in the front line? He didn't know what to, he went all blooming red. He said, get out of it, he said. So
I thought you said you brought thousands of cigarettes.
This is where I was lucky. My suitcase got separated from me, because if he'd have opened that, I'd have got the... And I thought, bloody hell, it's separated from me. The kit bag you brought down, but your other luggage was separated and you collected it when you got off the boat and took you, and then you got on the, and I thought, because I said, I've got over 2,000, I had boxes of cigars for my dad because he likes cigars, and I said, I had silk things for my things, I had in this thing, I thought I would have got away for years. Anyway, we got on, no other passengers were allowed to go on the train while we were on the train. Because I've told you this, Jack Jenner was married. She came all the way from London to meet him. They wouldn't let her get on the train. She had to get the next train. Anyway, we got to... where did we go to? Was it Waterloo or was it...
Waterloo, probably.
Probably Waterloo. We came out and there was army vehicles waiting as we got on there. And they took us to Liverpool Street Station because we had to go to... Not Norwich, because that's where Britannia Barracks was. And when we got to Britannia Barracks, they put us in barracks. Oh, no kidding you, Peter. A woman put pigs in there. Yeah, they were condemned. They were filthy dirty. All the windows were boarded up and burnt. There was the fire that never worked. And it was freezing cold, as you know, we got in. It was freezing. And because we complained, they back squatted us. So instead of getting out where we should have got out, we didn't get out till the end of February because they backsquared. They wouldn't let us out the army. In fact, he was going to keep us there till April, he told us. But the fun is back. We got on parade, and who's there in parade? Hemsdon. And I thought, how the bloody hell did he get here before us? He was on the ship after we got there, and but obviously we went on leave. By the time we got, he was there. And he was in a nasty mood. He was the one that backsquared us. He said, you, he said to me, you of all people should, because we were all moaning, we were just fed up to the teeth. He said, yeah, and I later found out he'd left the army because this Frank Fleming was made up before him and he knew that he had no chance, so he came out. But he had such a chip on his shoulder that he let it out on us, do you know what I mean? So he thought, right, I'll get back at you. And, I remember walking along and all these recruits, we used to do the same thing. When we came up to a lance or corporal, we stood to attention. And I said to this bloke, why are you standing at attention? This sergeant, he said, these blokes are cadet, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself. He said, you should know that. I thought, oh, bugger off. How I was in a mood. And because we went out, we went skating on the skate, not skate, on roller skate.
Did you have any duties?
No, none at all. We absolutely did not a damn thing. We just sat in these bloody huts until we could go out anytime we liked. We could go out all day long if we wanted to. We usually just walk out because nobody checked us. Because who was on the gate? The guys that were in this within career, they'd come home early. I met this man, I said, Peter, what are you doing on the gate? He said, get out of it. He said, we'll get out of it.
So what would you do?
We'd go out, try and meet the girls. We'd go into pubs, you know. When we went roller skating one day, there was a roller skating rink there. And I couldn't stand up my feet. We were rolling around, laughing our heads off, joined ourselves. Went into the pub. We used to get drunk. We used to come back. Just walk through the gate because nobody bothered. They weren't bothered with us. They weren't interested. They could have buried us somewhere. They would have done. Do you know what I mean? They were not interested in us at all because it was like we were. It's a training place. You see, they were training these recruits like we were training. But you see, they were. Well, we didn't know. They were closing the barracks. The barracks now don't exist anymore. They're now. I think somebody said it's some hospital of some sort there now. But I don't know.